Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Show Recaps Theater presents Movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post Show Recaps, featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, welcome back to Post Show Recaps Theater. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by my co-host. It is Grace. Grace, how are you doing?
You like gay rom-coms, bro?
Yes, this movie, we are here to talk about bros, plural, in all their glory. The movie is really cool. I've been calling it Bros. Like, the word is like an abbreviation of, well, I guess it's not an abbreviation. It's just like it's missing.
It's an abbreviation of brother.
Brothers, that's right. Brothers. It's like, I'm trying to think, like, what's the colloquial term that I'm thinking of?
When they make the lesbian sequel, they could call it Bros.
I was thinking they call it Les, but yeah, Bros is much better.
And then when they do the bisexual, they could call it Bis.
Bis.
God, is there a whole, I don't know if we have a trans.
Bros extended universe, which. You know, we can get into how people would receive that. This movie didn't do as well as people wanted it to at the box office. I will say that off the bat. Yes, the word bomb is used a lot. Bros bombed. Love, you know, people love alliteration.
The one thing I'll say about this movie, yes, it bombed. Did I get to go see it with a bunch of just gay men in a movie? Yes, there's a lot of queer people in the theater, which was actually a very nice experience that I think I had. That it does not feel like often that you, a movie theater especially, that you get to have like a queer experience at the movie theater. So that was very fun. I thought one of the things I enjoyed about going to watch this movie was because I watched it on the, just, they do this in New York. They always say the movie's coming out on Friday. They used to do these midnight releases, and now at least in Canada they'll be like, by Friday midnight, we actually mean like Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. So they'll air like Thursday night is actually when it opens, even if they're like, it actually opened on Friday. So I saw the Thursday night premiere. Yeah.
It's absolutely a thing here. It's like,
why? I don't get it.
It's greed. It's the same thing as like,
it's capitalism. I see.
Right. It's the same thing as like, what is it called? Black Friday. Like Black Friday used to mean, you know, super early and go. Now it's like literally on Thanksgiving night, people are like already at the stores shopping because they want to extend the amount of time. It's horrible.
Yeah. So I saw it on Thursday night at like 9 p.m. and the theater, it was pretty full of mostly gay men, I think, which was like kind of fun. At least me to be with other queer people. I'm not a gay man, but it was very fun.
Yeah, no, it definitely did feel it. There was that element to it of like, I even though I saw it in the afternoon, it was, you know, in some ways it feels like, well, it is very obviously in a lot of ways a queer movie, but to be in a theater, to your point, there are rare cases where you feel like you're seeing something with a predominantly queer audience, and it does like add a layer of, and to be clear, for me, in my experience, at least, like a queer audience that runs like a large age spectrum. So yes, that also is a, was a cool part of it.
Yes.
And to that point, we're talking about this movie being quote unquote important to a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. And it's, you know, the first, let me try to get this right. It is the first mainstream Hollywood studio movie exclusively released in theaters featuring an all gay cast, yes, with gay leads. I believe that's all correct.
Yes, that is all correct. Cause the first movie to do that is Fire Island, which was not released theatrically. So as soon as you add theatrically, then yes, right, this becomes the first movie by a major studio to have an all openly LGBTQ principal cast to get a theatrical release, which is a mouthful, but it is important.
Yeah. Right. It is an important mouthful. Like a lot of, like a lot of
stuff in the movie.
This movie. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. The movie is poking fun at itself and at that fact in general. I think that the way it does so is successful at times less successful. We'll get into that. But I think, you know, it clearly, I will say this from the get, it clearly is serving a lot of people, a lot of, what's the saying? It's serving a lot of masters, I think, quote unquote, in a way that is sometimes very evident of like, we have to shoehorn this thing in, we have to show this kind of thing. It's, you know, we should also say that it's all working under the umbrella and within the skeleton system of what is considered a traditional rom-com, I think, in ways that are fun for the most part for the movie to grapple with, because it does have some of those like very classic rom-com beats that any like straight traditional rom-com would have.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, I've seen Billy Eichner and there's been some jokes going around that like people are kind of he's sort of like the satire of his tweets are like, I've invented gay cinema, don't worry, like, you know that. And I think that for me, where I came out of this movie, I did think it was very fun. I do think that it is not to the degree, it's not the tragedy that often, they make a joke about this in the movie, about movies like Brokeback Mountain, that often are sad dramas. This is not a sad drama, it's a romantic comedy. And yet I also do think he's talked a lot about how there was, this movie isn't about someone depressingly coming out, but it also is somebody struggling with their identity a fair amount, and not necessarily Billy's character. It's mostly Bobby. It's mostly the other character. But I don't know, I'm struggling with this idea of feeling like this movie both it's pretty queer, because, you know, it's pretty gay. There's a lot, you know, and there's like trans characters and all this sort of stuff, but it really is centered around pretty much just about this, mostly his relationship with one man who is struggling with his identity, right? To be sort of a certain type of gay man. And so I think that while I can like acknowledge that this is an important film, I'm also kind of ready for us to be so past this as well, like this specific era, like if we've left the Kill Your Gays era, which I'm not even sure we have done that. Right. There are many TV shows and movies that are still doing the Kill Your Gays thing.
Yep.
This is sort of a weird middle ground where it's not quite that, but it's also not, I feel like, as sort of progressive as I thought this movie might be, if that makes sense. And I feel very weird saying that about a queer movie that, like we said, is the first theatrical release, like a full LGBTQ cast. So yeah, I have complicated thoughts about this movie.
Absolutely. And I think my thoughts are overall pretty complicated. I think you know, we'll get to the actual meat and bones of the movie itself, but I think to your point a little bit, there is this feeling of like, yes, they, as even Billy Eichner himself, sometimes jokingly, sometimes very sincerely and honestly, is saying this movie is groundbreaking in a lot of ways because of the cast representation, because of the themes that it deals with, and the literal at times things that you see on the screen that you've never seen in like a major Hollywood movie before. It still feels like, I don't know, I guess the word sterilized, which is crazy to say because there's some stuff in this movie that's like so incredibly sexual and so like it's a very R-rated movie. And it sets out to be, you know, Judd Apatow, who was involved, who didn't actually direct it, but I believe he produced it and was involved in the kind of making of it and creation of it. He's no stranger to having like provocative sexual situations in his movies or groundbreaking ones, whatever. And here, that is definitely there. But in some ways, the movie is still left feeling, to your point, a little bit like in that weird middle ground of like, it wants to be doing all these things and it's doing so many things that it's only doing some of them well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the director is Nicholas Stoller, who is not LGBTQ, at least, sorry, he is in a, he is married to a woman, I believe, or with a woman and has daughters. That doesn't mean he's not LGBTQ, I guess. So I should just say that. I don't actually know. He's done a bunch of stuff. He directed Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Get Him to the Greek. More recently, The Neighbors movie. I do feel like the one thing, I think I said this, that the movie is rather diverse, the cast, but the main story does really center on Bobby, Billy Eichner's character, and then is it Luke McFarland who plays Shepard? Mm-hmm. I think that their relationship feels a little. I mean, it is about two white gay men being in a relationship, and they're dealing with like. The movie is called Bro, so it has this thing, you know, that Aaron sort of struggles with what type of gay person he is, and being whether he's attracted to people who are like hyper masculine. And Billy, Bobby, sorry, is like struggling with that idea that he's not what Aaron is interested in throughout much of the movie. And I just feel like for as progressive as a lot of the other parts of the outer skirts of this movie feel, it feels like the center is not. And that also might just totally be like the bubble that I live in, which is, you know, I saw someone complain recently that the movie felt like it started when the movie was announced and it felt like, oh, like a queer rom-com, it's really fun. And as it sort of slowly started to come out, it felt like it was a little bit being catered to straight people, like straight people come watch your gay movie instead of who clearly went to go see it, which is, I think, only gay people saw this movie. Not really. I think that all of that makes it like a fairly complicated movie in that I feel like the main thing of the movie was the least interesting parts of the movie, if that makes sense. Like the relationship between Aaron and Bobby to me is the least interesting part of this rom-com.
Yeah, I think I know what you're getting at, and it's weird for me because the experience, you know, I watched this movie and then I watched Fire Island, which is a movie that you mentioned, which is a movie that I had not seen. And as soon as I saw this movie, I was like, I think I need to correct that mistake because my friend, not mistake, but, you know, correct that, check that box, so to speak, because I kind of just wanted to compare how I would feel. And I was curious as to like the greater context of, you know, where we are now a little bit as far as like gay movies. And it is a little bit different because that one premiered on streaming, as we keep saying, specifically sent to Hulu in the US. And that one was diversely cast in a way that wasn't calling attention to itself. Like here in this movie, in Bros, you have a lot of side characters who are either who are not white in some way, you know, people of color, or you know, queer in a new way that hasn't really been seen again in like a release this wide, but they're kind of left very, very much on the sidelines and at times very, very much just for comedic effect in a way that I didn't always love. And it's hard to, we're talking about some very heady things and some very complicated issues and the way people perceive things and audiences, but it feels like if everyone who was involved in this movie, it didn't quite live up to what it itself kind of thought it would be or presented itself as. And I'm not saying it was like a bait and switch. I'm just saying I was left a little bit wanting with some of that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that Fire Island got made last year, my hope is that just like more of this stuff gets made rather than being like, well, Bros is bad, so we can't do a queer comedy anymore, queer rom-com, right? Let's have it and do more. I think the best example of this thing that we're sort of talking about is, I think, the LGBTQ plus museums like board or the staff at the museum. You essentially have at least two trans women of or non-binary folks, only their exact identity, and then another trans woman, white trans woman, and then Dot Marie Jones playing Cherry and Jim Rash, and I feel like that to me was some of my favorite scenes in the movie, was just all the stuff that was happening at the museum and that crew. That I, you know, it's funny, I think that there's a way in which I talked about this idea that the gay character used to have to be a side character. It almost felt like the only way that this movie would be palatable in a way, the way it gets picked up, is to have a white gay man with a man like, you know, in a rom-com with a man who is very like Hollywood conventionally attractive. If not, I think what's interesting is that he doesn't, you know, to the movie's points, he does not feel like, a stereotypical gay man. He's like this country guy, and Aaron, he likes Garth Brooks, you know, and there's that whole piece around that. But then all of the trans people and women are like the side characters in this movie. So I think very interesting. I think that if this sort of like opens the door for, you know, a trans rom-com to get made, more of these movies to be made with different people, then great. We'll look back at this to being like, oh, it's really cool that this movie got made. And it's not the first. I mean, we gave it the sort of like the first theatrical openly full cast, LGBTQ cast, but Fire Island, like, you know, did get released in the era of, you know, in 2020. Was it, did it come out this year, 2022 or 2021? 2022.
I think it was this year.
Came out in June. Pride. Yeah. It came out around Pride.
Yeah, right.
And so like that movie kind of is actually the one that, like, you know, we're talking about opening the door, right? Like opens the door. So yeah, whereas I could see this one because it's a theatrical release sort of being the one that people look back as sort of like the Ellen DeGeneres episode, right? Like Ellen paved the way. Like Billy Eichner paved the way. Like, well, I don't know, it was Fire Island before there was.
Yes, he's redefining rom-coms for a whole generation.
That being said, there are many moments in this movie that I laughed a lot. I think there's some very clever writing in here. It's not a bad, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. There's sort of that like thing of, I feel like I was wanting it to push a little bit more. And at times it does push further than I thought it would, but mostly about things that, while we haven't seen the queer version of it, we have seen a version of it. So, you know, sex scenes and things like that. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, it was this part of the conversation is, you know, it's a little easier to get out of the way in the beginning, because there are things about the movie that we liked that we want to talk about, because ultimately I was left feeling good when I walked out of the theater. And, you know, I think feeling some of the crescendoing moments of music towards the, you know, of a very known moment in a quote unquote conventional rom-com is it just hits you. And yes, the movie's playing with your expectations a little bit of all that stuff, but in a way that feels effective and feels pretty smart at times. Billy Eichner, quite a departure for him.
When I left the movie theater, I felt like the people who watched were just like, that was fun. That was nice. That was cool that I got to see myself reflected in the movie, in a movie in the way that I haven't. And I think that is really great and should be acknowledged. And, you know, not everybody who was sitting in that movie was like, well, what's the cultural legacy of this movie?
Right.
like we are.
Was this movie queer enough? Did it push the boundaries enough? Yeah, no, I agree with you.
If I'm going to say like see it or skip it, I honestly think I could say like straight people should go see this movie, and queer people, you could wait. You could totally wait. I actually do think you could, like, you know, it's totally fine. If you don't feel obligated to go see it. Go see it if you want. There's some parts in it. There's a specific cameo that I was like absolutely delighted by in the middle of the film, which you can talk about later. But yeah. And I think Billy Eichner is like pretty good, to your point of this is a different role for him. He plays much more serious. He's it's a rom-com, but he also is playing ironically a bit of the straight man in the movie to a degree to some of the other comedy the people that he's playing off. So I thought he was very good in this movie. So yeah.
Yes, I would say you know, you should see it. Although again, to the box office numbers, it seems like not everyone did. But you should definitely see it. I think it'll probably, even though it's like maybe, you know, I love to nitpick about time, it's probably like a few minutes too long. You know, like I
would agree.
155. Like you can make this like a 145 or
155. Is it? It's 115, right?
It's no. The time now or the length of the movie?
The length of the movie. It's 115 minutes, right?
Yes. It's one. Sorry, I wasn't doing minutes. I was like doing 150, like an hour.
I was like 150 minutes. It's not a 2.5 hour.
Minutes.
Yes. It a 2.5 hour movie? No. Okay. Yes. Yes. Lord, you are correct.
That it was not.
Yeah. It comes in just under 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's a little bit of stuff to trim there. And I think, you know, another thing I want to quickly say is it did feel like to my previous point about like, you know, having to do a lot of things at once and serve a lot of different masters, so to speak, in making this movie. There was some of that stuff that you could feel of like things having been cut out or trimmed or like oddly paced, perhaps. Some of the stuff, I think it was a little more evident, I think, than they wanted to. But ultimately, it's I walked out, I was smiling. So that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, totally agree.
It's not boring, as I like to say.
It's not boring. Yeah.
It's not boring. It's my ultimate metric. Is it boring?
I use that today on another podcast. Yeah.
The way Jeff Probst apparently is like, but was it fun? Mine is like, it's not boring.
I said that on another podcast. I was watching a movie with Chappelle and Rob Sesnia for Nothing But Netflix. And I said, you know, I didn't think it was boring. And Chappelle said, I was pretty bored. Yeah. Well.
So there you go. That's clearly a good metric.
It is. Yeah.
So now we are going to move into the spoiler zone, as I have just dubbed it just now. We will see on whether that sticks.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we meet our friend Bobby, played by Billy Eichner, who's a podcast host, and
for the whole movie,
to a point that Grace brought up earlier, doesn't really come up again. It's like very exposition dumpy in the beginning of like, I'm going to use this podcast to talk about certain things and talk about, you know, the fact that I was approached to do a movie about a game. Like, it's very meta on the nose of like him being a potential screenwriter for a movie like this that he made, which is the movie that we're watching. You know, so it does do a good job of like setting up some stuff about his life. We get, you know, information that he's single, that he's alone, that he's never apparently been in a relationship or a full quote unquote like in love relationship. And he's fine to be alone. He's fine to be by himself. He enjoys his time in front of the TV. But he does hook up. He's not romantic-less. He does hook up with random guys over Grindr, which is a whole piece of the movie that I was not expecting to spend so much time on.
Yeah, they really dive into, I mean, he says that at one point that like queer relationships are different. They're not the same as straight relationships. And I feel like the like hookup culture of Grindr, not that straight people don't have it, but I do feel like, yeah, this was a good examination into this.
It definitely feels more unique to the queer community in some ways that this movie goes into. He attends an award ceremony for an LGBTQ community center, I think, and then eventually there is an announcement that the LGBTQ plus National Museum is going to be in New York, and he is the head curator, like the head of the board of establishing what that's going to be.
He wins cis gay man of the year, white man of the year, I believe.
Cis
the award
white
he wins.
Gay man of the year, which is very, very specific and very funny. Like a lot of this movie, I will just say a lot of this movie, it's like you can see and hear Billy Eichner's very specific, incisive, grating at times, very aggressive form of comedy in this movie. And so then he's out at a bar. His friend is played by Guy Branum, who I love from days watching Chelsea Lately back in the day. And they spot Aaron, who is played by Patrick McFarlane, who will be our second lead. And he's hot but boring.
Luke McFarlane,
thank you. Who is described as hot but boring. And, you know, like a lot of people in this movie, he spends a lot of time shirtless. And, you know, if you had a body that looked like that, you probably would do the same, is I think the thinking. And Bobby and Aaron immediately have like an interaction. It seems like Aaron has spotted Bobby, and they're kind of not really on the same page. Bobby, played by Billy Eichner, is very he's at times much like his public self, though, or at least the way that we kind of as a culture have consumed Billy Eichner, but in some ways more subtle. And I think it's really interesting to see like him rub up against Aaron's character, who is pretty boring for the most part. I will say the movie tries to do a good job of like giving him, and I like this for the most part, when like you give the other lead, even though Bobby is our window into this world, you give the other lead separate scenes of just their life to get a better understanding of that person. It's not just Aaron's interactions with Bobby. We see Aaron in his regular life, but there's not much there. There's not much
I feel like Bobby, played by Billy Eichner, is actually interestingly like a toned down version of like Billy. He's very confident and brazen, but he is still not as loud and obnoxious as the Billy Eichner, like Billy on the street that we know, if that makes sense, which I think is probably a character. I feel like this is more like if you just met Billy Eichner, you'd be like, oh yeah, there's enough Billy Eichner in this character to feel like it's realistic, but it does feel toned down because he's so over the top and Billy on the street.
I definitely agree with that. And so they have their interaction at the club and it goes kind of well, kind of not. Bobby, one of my favorite runners in the movie, I think they don't do enough of, because I think it stops at some point, is like Aaron's character just disappearing, like a la Batman. Like you never see him walk away, he just like is gone. When he gets uncomfortable or when he gets shy or whatever, it's pretty funny. And he does that originally at the club, but then they have a mutual friend who Aaron gets Bobby's number from, and they agree to hang out, and it's the beginning of their hey what's up like conversations, which you know is how they text each other. And so they go to the movies, they run into Aaron's friend Josh, who will be like the one of the points in contention of the movie, of like a jealousy activator. And at the time where we meet Josh, he's straight. Later we will learn that Josh will leave his wife and divorce will come out as gay. It's actually Aaron's brother who's divorced, but will come out as gay and is seemingly like now going to live this gay lifestyle. And Aaron and Josh have this history of like they were on a hockey team together, very, very bro-y.
He had a crush on him.
He had a crush on him, which is a very important detail that Aaron shares with Bobby. And of course, Bobby is going to, you know, become like jealous of that as Josh continues to pop up. So, Then we are introduced to, you know, they're dating, as in any rom-com, Bobby and Aaron are like dating for a while. We're introduced to Aaron's family, and Bobby and Aaron have like a Christmas in New York day and night with them. And of course it has to go wrong because we need dramatic tension in the movie. And Bobby and Aaron have a really unfortunate conversation where Aaron basically tells Bobby to be less gay. He doesn't use
tone it down,
words, but he's like, tone it down in front of my parents. And then because Bobby is angry about that, understandably so, he kind of takes Aaron's mother to task about being a second grade teacher and not teaching her students about like the existence of gay people, basically, and, you know, gay history. Obviously, him leading up the museum, there's a lot of talk about gay history. And he blurts out that Aaron's really unhappy in his life, and it leads to their first like big fight, right? Of like, he's just, Aaron's like, please just be quiet. You ruined the night. You exposed things about me that I wasn't ready to tell my parents. And it's that they leave that night very, very on the rocks, their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I believe
Bobby immediately pretty much catches that Aaron had gone and spent time with Josh, and they're like about to kiss
yes,
they
Bobby are kissing. Does a lot of in the movie. Bobby does a lot of not letting things go, and which yes. is kind of like refreshing as far as like a plot perspective. That he is like, no, I'm going to go talk to him now. I'm going to call him. I'm going to text him. Yeah. And he follows. He basically, in a way, either it doesn't follow Aaron, but he ends up at the place where Aaron is, and Aaron is now hanging out with Josh, his like childhood crush, basically, who has come out as gay, and he catches them kissing, about to kiss, and they have this huge blowout fight where Bobby like really shares with Aaron how hurtful it was for Aaron to say what he said to him about like, can you just please tone it down in front of my parents, because it's speaking to Aaron's own internalized homophobia, right? It's not just that he's uncomfortable with Bobby being himself, it's that he doesn't know how to be himself.
Yep.
So you know, it's like this rocky piece of the relationship. And so eventually, you know, Aaron has shared with Bobby that he wanted to be like a chocolatier, which is like the first instance of anything interesting that we learned from Aaron.
Totally agreed.
Of yes. like he like had these ideas of being a chocolatier, and he had like all these designs for his cute little chocolates, and it's very, very sweet. You know, and separately, Aaron quits his job. Like, this is while him and Bobby are quote unquote broken up. He quits his job and he starts doing this like little chocolates, and he sends Bobby a video of himself like, you know, I'm going to sell these at one of these like markets, and the proceeds will go to your museum, and I hope you're doing well. You know, he's kind of like reaching out to him.
Yeah. There's like this back plot the whole time that Bobby needs to raise $5 million more dollars to be able to open the museum that he is curating. Mm-hmm. If they don't get it, they won't be able to. And there's also some debate about what the final part of the museum should be as well. That's like all sort of happening in the background as this is also happening.
Yes. So then finally we get to the opening night of the museum, and there's a huge crowd turning out, and like Bobby and Aaron are separately like kind of thinking about each other and missing each other. And then you know, Aaron, because Bobby has reached out to Aaron via text, like Aaron is encouraged by his brother to like reach out to him to have like the final, you know, go to him, like go chase him at the airport. They actually make a reference like all those pre 9/11 movies where the people were just able to get through like the security doors and like get to the gate. And then there's a musical moment, like this ending, it just goes on and on. But like Bobby sings a half Garth Brooks like song and a half like Schitt's Creek, I'm gonna sing to you famous moment. There's a lot of mention of Schitt's Creek in the movie.
Yeah, the movie starts off, it's a Garth Brooks, like they just changed the lyrics, and then suddenly it's just not a Garth Brooks song anymore, I believe.
Yes,
like, could be totally wrong. I know my Garth Brooks.
It's definitely like, what is it? Of, I guess, a version of like a wand off of a,
yeah,
of a
Garth Brooks song. Yeah, and then but then by the middle, it just like becomes not like, maybe they only, you know when you can only play certain snippets of a,
yes,
song?
We
can,
we only have the rights to the first like 10 seconds.
10 seconds. So that's the parody, and then they had to switch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then of course, you know, Aaron has surprised Bobby at this opening by showing up, and, you know, then Bobby sings the song to him, and then they have like a beautiful reconciliation, and they are together, and they have found a way to love each other in spite of all the horribleness in the world. Bros.
Gay
and now they're bros.
Love is real.
That's the ending of the movie.
You will kiss me, bro. You will kiss me, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Gay love is real. Yeah, it's a lot, but in ways that are like very conventional for a rom-com, I think it's mostly successful in what it sets out to do.
So I actually, you know, I talked about this movie being centered on a, you know, a white gay relationship, but I actually did find a lot of the Aaron toning it down stuff, not being comfortable in this relationship. That's actually a similar experience I had when I came out as gay. I also did this thing of like, yeah, but I'm like, you know, I'm pretty like a straight type of gay, you know, like I'm not flamboyant, you know, like, you know, I had a lot of internalized homophobia, which is also internalized transphobia, as I would come to realize many years later. But I had a very similar experience to that in terms of being very nervous about having like a boyfriend at a time in university who was a little bit, was quite more flamboyant than I was. And like, I think we were going to go to like a baseball game with my brother or whatever. And being very nervous about that, especially coming from, very interestingly, Luke McFarlane, I think, was born in Ontario, in Canada. And I actually do feel like there is a lot of guys, straight or gay, like Aaron, from where I'm from, of country music, like Garth Brooks listening, like dudes, kind of. And so this is a, it was a very real like archetype, very boring as well. A lot of boring men from rural Ontario.
Yeah. Like, and they say in this movie, when you're that hot, you don't need to be interesting. Yeah, like,
that's right. And so I actually found a lot of that stuff compelling. I just feel like it, I don't know, it almost shows up a little bit like too late in the movie to a degree. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It, I found it interesting, but I guess it's probably actually that Aaron doesn't really show any, you know, a ton of vulnerability past that idea, that we never really go super deep with Aaron other than the chocolatier stuff in terms of, by the time they're back together, there's not even like a super, I don't know, there's not like a, there's not like a super acknowledgement of like them being, I don't know, do you know what I'm trying to get to? That I feel like the idea to me is an interesting one because it's something that like I was able to relate to, but I also feel like the movie, it's kind of like there and it doesn't go super deep in terms of this central, and it's the central conflict of their relationship.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think, God, it's, I keep coming back to what the movie was trying to do in like its original inception, perhaps like long ago, and then trying to now like, okay, now you have the people who are interested in like giving you money to make the movie. Do they want it to be in a certain way? It needs to appeal. You know, you have the market research people who are saying, well, if we can get it to the sweet spot, we can't make it to this or to that, but we, you know, we can kind of thread the needle and make it do everything we want it to do in a way that like the movie is a little bit lesser for it. It's, it doesn't feel as authentic is perhaps a real word, but it doesn't feel as authentic to some of the parts that they were trying to get to. And I think, you know, so, but some of the emotional stuff, like I actually think the more dramatic stuff, certainly with the Billy, the Bobby and Aaron relationship worked better than some of the comedy stuff, which I would have expected the opposite. I think like the, some of the Billy Eichner stuff just screams stand up. Like it's some, it's like sometimes you, you, sometimes it feels like either the monologue or some of the things he's saying is just some of his comedy, which is fine. He's literally in the movie, but it doesn't feel like organic conversation at times that like could have been distracting. But I was very pleasantly surprised at Billy Eichner's acting in some of these more dramatic moments and some of the way the sensitivity and the nuance in which they deal with like some of these very real complicated moments of them dealing with their own homophobia. And like, and after they have their, when the two of them have their blowout of after the night with the parents, and Bobby's like, I know what that means. I know what you were saying when you told me to tone it down. They, you know, he's then talking about, like he, in another scene, he walks away from Aaron, and Aaron says, like, in a moment that really shouldn't work, but he's like, he basically says, like, you've come to believe that you're not lovable, but like, right, I'm living proof that you are. And that it really hits so hard because of all of these like very big ideas that they're, that they're dealing with.
That scene gets interrupted with somebody trying to park their bike. And I don't understand why that's in there. It was not particularly funny.
It's a very, very New York moment.
Okay. Is it? Okay. All right.
Thing with City Bike.
Well, we have City Connect Bike as well.
You have a similar thing, but like the brands, like it's City Bike as in City Bank. Like City Bank is the City Bike, CITI Bank is the sponsor of CITY Biking in the city.
We have Bike Share Toronto as our
And yours is probably like a lot more affordable because it doesn't have this like corporate overlord thing. I find that that's true in a lot of cities, but there were other things that were less, that were more subtly New York things, but this is like, I was surprised it was even in there, but it was so good because like there are times where you're trying to get the bike in and it just doesn't, like, it's not that you need an Aaron type to like manhandle the bike for you. It's that
just
like,
it's just
sometimes
the
thing isn't working. Yeah. Sometimes the dock is actually broken. So like the idea that one of these very real moments would interrupt this thing was very funny, but it was very selfish. It's such a New York thing.
One of the things I think for me that where the movie I think didn't work as much as well as I wanted to is I do feel like it had an inconsistency of tone at times in terms of when we start the movie. And I know I've joked about this podcast that he like never is a podcaster for the rest of the thing, but he gets given the cis gay man of the year award, which immediately I'm like, oh, this is going to be quite absurdist is what this movie is going to be. And there are elements of that throughout the film, but very weirdly placed. And so the other thing that to me feels the most absurdist is when Bowen Yang's character, I think his name is Larry Grape, is convinced by Aaron to donate $5 million on a whim. But the only catch is that there must be a roller coaster built into the museum. And so that to me
is gay trauma.
Yes, it needs to be a history of gay trauma, and like it ends at it doesn't end at the Obama administration, but they get to the Obama administration, it's like, oh, you think it's over?
What's going
on? I thought all that stuff was like very funny, except that it. I am sort of a sucker for, you know, I'm like a rules person. I like structure. And I felt like there's where it's like taking me to a place that I didn't think we were into, because there's also these moments that are incredibly, incredibly vulnerable. And I've said this a lot, that like my favorite comedies make you cry and my favorite dramas make me laugh. Like I want both things, like a movie just being like completely like depressing for an hour and a half is not what I want. And I don't want it to just be trying to make me laugh for an hour and a half. I want both of these things, but I just felt like the movie, I kind of felt like didn't, you know what it was trying to do at certain points about what kind of comedy and what kind of rom-com it wanted to be to an extent. I will say going to Provincetown was worth it for Harvey Fierstein. It was completely worth it. Just for him to be in the movie for like 2 minutes.
They have some great cameos. Him on Provincetown earlier. And that award that you were talking about, the cis white man of the year, is presented by Kristen Chenoweth, who was wearing like a moving diorama, like full spinning circle around. I think it's like
the Stonewall riots.
They're throwing the bricks. Yeah.
Like it's so absurdist at some points of the movie. So those almost feel like dreams, you know,
like 30 Rock, but it's to your point in a way, like sometimes in those moments you do need the other person reacting to how ridiculous the thing is, because otherwise you're just like, is no one else seeing this? Is this not weird? Is like, what are the quote-unquote rules for this,
especially because the movie is so much about like Aaron's like grounded like internalized homophobia and like being happy in a relationship, that he's like also dating the guy who won like cis gay male of the year, to me is like a little bit like it doesn't really work. And maybe I'm being too hoity-toity about this, but like for me those stuff would almost work better as like dream sequences of like him imagining that he won this award, because then Aaron isn't actually dating like apparently New York City's white gay man of the
to that point a little bit, there are moments that are very much actually just a dream sequence or like a sideways like almost like a Family Guy-esque, like, let's throw to the actual execution of this joke we just made, you know, like the chicken fight or whatever. Like, it's and I guess in that sense the movie tries to have its cake and eat it too, but yeah, it's interesting. And I think, you know, our conversation is like super, super complicated and nuanced, but I think ultimately the movie is, even though it talks about, you know, I think there's this very compelling part where Billy's character Bobby is talking about how love is not love. Like, people love to throw around that phrase, love is love. And like, I think it's very, very clear what that is supposed to mean, but he's here in this movie, he's saying, this isn't the same, and it shouldn't be, because it's like, the fact that it isn't the same is what makes it not the same. And that sounds so dumb to say, but like, they're like, a gay relationship is not a straight relationship in ways both fundamental and nuanced, and are clear and nuanced. And I think it's just calling, you know, two things have a different name, then they are different, and we shouldn't we shouldn't want to fit into this box that society has held up for, quote, you know, like a heteronormative monogamous relationship. And it's interesting to me that the movie is doing that, right? Like, on a grander scale, it's trying to reinvent or redraw the lines around within what a rom-com is capable of, but it still has to kind of exist in that norm and in that world, in that system, if you will.
Yep.
And I think that's a little bit of what we're grappling with, of like, the movie is kind of at times feeling like it's all over the place because it has to do all these different things.
I agree. I think it's a really good point that the theme of the movie, which is at least part of it, is that, you know, part of me feels like there is this message of like, yes, love is not love, in terms of that queer love is not the same as like straight love, and it should not be. We should not be striving for, you know, to have relationships that like are understandable and, and accepted by heterosexual people. And at the same time, I do feel like in many ways the movie tries to do that. And I don't know whether that's like, how much did the vision change versus the output that perhaps like a network or a studio put on the movie, in terms of, you know, there's that thing I said at the beginning, that I think some people were feeling like the movie started to feel like it was being catered to a straight people. I know that this movie was a reward, a prize on Big Brother. I saw some people being like, it felt like Taylor, the straight woman, was more excited about this movie than Michael was, the gay man, to a degree. So, you know, not that he did, I think, speak highly of it, but I think that, like, you know, she seemed way more excited about this movie, which I think is a little bit indicative of like what this movie turned out to be. I will say, in terms of like the stuff I really loved, I think that I just want to go back to the like board or the staff, because I thought there was such good and such funny commentary on different generations of gay people as well. Yeah. The like trans woman who just is on her, like, everything needs to be filmed, and Billy Eichner being like, that is one of the things you've taught me, that everything needs to be filmed at all times, is so funny. I believe Wanda is the person who's bald, played by Miss Lawrence, who is just like, I hear you. And I'm having space for you. And she says it later in the movie, and it didn't really get like a laugh line in my theater, but I thought it was so funny because she's just doing the same thing. I'm just going to make sure I have pronouns correct on Miss Lawrence. So friggin' funny to later in the thing, just be like, when they're actually having a real, like, serious fight about what the last part of the museum should be, and they're just like, I hear you, and I'm holding space for you. Jim Rash is constantly making sure that everybody knows that Abraham Lincoln was at least bisexual. It's very funny. I thought Dot Marie Jones, who I know from played a trans person on Glee, I believe, played Coach Beast on Glee. I was very funny in terms of, there's a, like, all the lesbians hold him down.
Lesbians hold him down. It's like some of that stuff. And that was like very Billy Eichner, you know, just like, come on, lesbians, run. Like, it's just, it's very funny. It's very, it's such a great, so many great visuals, so many great like running gags.
When Billy Eichner is like unloading his relationship trauma, and she's like, "Stop! Do not do this. Everybody does this. I am not Grace." Yeah. And then Jerry comes out and is like, "I only trust her to escort me out because will you unload your emotional drama?" She's like, "Absolutely not." She's like, "Absolutely not. That's right." It's so funny.
It's so funny to have Deborah Messing kind of probably do a little bit of actual venting here. Of like, every single gay person that I've ever met has treated me as if I am like the, you know, the gay best friend.
Yes.
And I am not my character. I'm not Grace. She is like, "I am not Grace Leader, the podcaster. I am my own person." It was so funny. It's such like a great subversion, and then and to have her come back at the end, you know, and like want to talk to him. It's like, "Not now, Deborah Messing."
I'll never say this again, but "Not now, Deborah Messing."
It's really funny. Some of the humor stuff worked really well. Like, there's so many, you know, I think what I'm getting at is like, there's so many pieces of this movie that absolutely work.
Agreed.
And it seems like in the way that they were coming together, they didn't always work.
I would agree with that. Cause I think that like you were like, yeah, a lot of the emotional beats work. I would agree that like Luke McFarlane is not the most captivating or interesting. At least Aaron Shepherd is not the most interesting person, but I kind of see why they did it in terms of trying to have somebody who is sort of this hyper masculine, kind of boring. Like, they are making a commentary. I thought the movie at the beginning was actually funny. Once we get past the podcast on the awards, it's when he's out and they're having the conversation about gay people have made a really good reputation for themselves of making people think that they're smart, but there's a lot of really dumb, dumb people. And it comes back later. So somebody who's straight is like, "Oh yeah, all you gays are so smart."
That's so funny.
But there is a lot of bits that in this movie that do work. It's almost like, what's the metaphor where like the sum is greater than the whole, but in this case,
it's the opposite, right?
It's less than the whole of its parts. Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff I'll remember and take from this movie. I think it's very funny, and it's like trying and saying something about queer. I mean, again, specifically cis gay male relationships, because a lot of the other commentary that they have about queer relationships or queer people, like, I love the boardroom team, I love the staff team, but also a lot of that stuff is like a joke. I don't want to say at their expense, but it doesn't also get the moment to have gravitas.
Yes,
in the same way that Billy Eichner gets to do all of the Grindr, like the jokes about Grindr, the like scene where they're like beating each other up and they're like getting into each other, like all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. They also get the levity and they get the gravitas, and it feels like every other type of queer person only gets levity is like, yes. I think the conclusion I'm sort of coming to, which I don't mind. I really like the stuff we got. It's like, okay, now can we take like the type of people we saw in the background of this movie, and can they have movies in the future, please?
And bring them to the forefront. If not their own movie, which they should, but at least to like an equal footing, like you just said, as far as like the emotional components of the movie, if like, obviously, you know, there's only so much runtime in a movie, but it does feel like there's stuff that could have made, you know, could have been lent more emotional weight, could have certain characters that could have been featured more. And to your point, yeah, it does kind of straddle that line of like, the jokes don't feel at the expense of those board members, but
yeah,
you know, they're being trotted out to do a lot of the laugh heavy lifting with regards to the museum specifically. So it's like,
and they don't, because they're all played by people who are those people.
Yes,
right.
Yes. So I think you're laughing with them at worst, you know,
and I felt like the idea of like recording everything does feel like a bit of an accurate, like it's a very funny commentary on the sort of like vapid vain trans woman. Mm-hmm. And then there's the person who's like, yeah, I'm holding space for you, I'm listening. Mm-hmm. The like totally over it, like woman who's like, no, thank you. Like I'm not saying they like shouldn't have been in this movie. I feel like that was so good, but it was like, that's such a good start. And like, where can you go from there is the like thing. And it's not like it is a critique of the movie, but not, I just want to really make sure I'm not like, yeah, anyway, I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but no, no. I get it. I think it's. Yeah. I think, you know, we're trying to not just talk about what could have been better about the movie based on what we would have liked to see and based on our experiences, but that does not invalidate, obviously, any enjoyment that any person, whether they are queer or not queer, could have gotten from this movie.
Yeah, because one of the things I was thinking about before, and I've said this a lot in talking about queer media, is Bobby has this moment when Aaron wants to try being non-monogamous, and he wants to hook up with he wants to hook up with Josh or whatever. There's also the guy who's like joins in, it's like, yes, tagging on. It's very funny as well. I thought that was very funny.
So funny.
He's like getting kid, and he's like, oh, uh-huh, smacking people.
Pillow fight.
Clearly not welcome. Very uh-huh funny. And then uh-huh Bobby later is like, you know what? That didn't really work for me, which is a totally, you know, valid thing. And I actually think there's a way in which like it can kind of be important that it's in there for him to be like a gay man who's like I want monogamy in my relationship. Like that's great. That is representation for people. There are, yes, gay men who are like, yeah, I'm not into like polygamy. I just want, you know, I want to be monogamous. Mm-hmm. But also like, yeah, that's one story. Like I think the other thing, just like if there's straight people listening to this podcast, unless you've all tuned out, right, that yeah this is basically like, not only is this just like about a cis gay white man, it's also just like one person's, you know, story, and there's so many more queer stories, right? There's like a different cis gay white male story than this one of like, yeah, somebody who is you know, more into polygamy or whatever, right? So this right is just like one piece that we're getting, and unfortunately for like queer people, it has to represent a ton of queer people.
It has to do everything at once, yes, because yeah of the lack of this until now makes this, and we talk about this all the time in regards to various different like more marginalized communities, of like the brunt of the burden that you have to shoulder as this movie, because you are representing so much, this being a first and you wanting to do all these things but still be accessible to quote unquote the everyday person, whatever that means, right, to like the studios and America, of like the metrics that they're all trying to read, because they're afraid of alienating people, right? Ultimately with this kind of movie, you're like, oh, I don't want XYZ person to feel like they wouldn't enjoy this movie, or they wouldn't be welcome in seeing this movie. It's freaking complicated. And I think yeah ultimately the point is that I wish that it wasn't there is a little bit of like a straight lens on it, and it has to, again, if we're talking about the quote unquote system of the rom-com, it kind of has to, it inherently has that gaze. Like we talk about like the male gaze, the female gaze, there is like the rom-com gaze, so yeah, here, and G-A-Z-E to be clear, you know, that the movie exists in. So it's a lot. Yeah. And it's ultimately unfair that this movie has to bear, agreed, that brunt, right? It's not like we're saying it's almost impossible for it to do everything that we are talking about.
I know, but, and it's not even like it's a bad movie, because I feel like if Billy Eichner was listening to this pod, like I'd be a little bit like worried that he would take that the wrong way, because I think for many reasons it's extremely understandable why Billy Eichner ends up making this specific movie, mm-hmm, which again, there's a lot of history of like the first queer movie, and again, if we're talking about like, you know, the first theatrical release with an all queer mm-hmm cast, mm-hmm, like yeah, it does make sense that like this is what gets made, mm-hmm, to hopefully open the door for Hollywood to be like, okay, more, but also that movie needs to be successful for studios to be like, okay, we'll make more, because if it's unsuccessful, which by box office standards it kind of was, then right they're like, well, I guess we can't make queer movies anymore, because we get lumped into just queer movies instead of this is an unsuccessful rom-com, right, rather than an unsuccessful queer movie, right? So yeah, I don't really blame Billy Eichner for making this specific movie, and especially because it seems so drawn in his own
own personal experience. And of course, this is the movie that he made in the same way that, like, if I wrote a movie about my thing, it would be very much about, like, a white trans woman's experience. And probably, you know, I'd have to work, you know, make sure that, like, yeah, I'm, like, giving voice to these other people. But this is the story that he wanted to tell about his personal life. So it's, like, very tricky, very complicated, nuanced.
Yeah, he can only tell the story that he's familiar with, you know, like, people tell stories all the time, but it's they very clearly wanted to draw attention to the fact that this is a somewhat limited perspective of just these two specific individuals, while also trying to give a voice to and feature a much more diverse cast of characters and a much more diverse cast period. And it's, you know, your mileage may vary on whether they are successful and whether that's important, because they spend a lot of the movie being like, yes, we are white, even within the movie, like, I am a white man. Like, I don't have all the experiences and I don't speak for everyone. And there's the thing at the end, like, we are not a monolith, which, you know, all well and good, but, you know, they spend a lot of movies being these two white guys. So, you know, but the movie's called Bros ultimately. So it's about Bros. We can't say that it's false advertising.
I liked it, and I think people should watch it. And I think that you're, like, whether you enjoyed it as, like, a queer person, I think your mileage will, like, vary tremendously. Whereas I do still think, despite all of these things, like, I think it's important context for people if you're straight and you didn't watch the movie, or people who are straight and are going to go watch the movie. I think there's a lot to, like, learn from this movie in terms of, like, being a straight ally, I guess there's not a ton of trans. There's just trans people in the movie. I don't tell you anything about being trans, but So I think it's worth people watching. And
yes. And I hope that our conversation has only added to the experience and not taken away, because, you know, to the point about how the movie only has its own experience based on who made it, we only have our experiences as queer people watching this thing. And
I speak on behalf of a lot of people.
I have this document that says I am allowed to speak on behalf of all these other people. Mm-hmm. Bros. It made me laugh.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah,
it is fun. All right. I think that's enough about Bros. We've said, I can't think of anything in the
movie. It's a gay movie, bro.
It's so gay, bro. It's farcical. It's like, at times it's ridiculous what this movie is saying, even just with that bro stuff. And I'm very happy for the record to see so much at one point I couldn't even look at the screen. There was, like, so much, like, actually very realistic gay stuff going on, and, like, the portrayal of gay sex in media is important. So you can, that's also a thing. That's not a thing.
100%. Yeah.
Oy. Okay. So, Grace, what else do you have going on? Are you just going to watch this movie over and over again for the week? What else?
Yeah, just going to keep watching it. No, I have so many other things to watch. House of the Dragon, Mike Bloom and I get on a podcast as soon as the episode ends. Get that podcast into your feeds kind of, like, very early Monday morning, like after midnight, or for your Monday morning commute. Also, Interview with a Vampire, very queer show that is coming out this week. 2-episode premiere. It actually dropped on Sunday during the day. AMC is doing this thing that they did with, I believe, Dexter. We're like, they're just going to put the episodes on AMC Plus during the day, and then you could watch on TV at night if you wanted to. So very interesting. So Philly and I are covering that, and more to come on post-show recaps. Over on Rob is a Podcast, I have a new show called Roll Call. We played Settlers of Catan the first month, and just a few days ago, we played the Game of Thrones board game. Taryn, Philly, Puya, Mike Bloom, Kirsten, and I all played. It was very, very fun. You can check out the full video on demand on YouTube or Twitch, and we'll have an edited version coming out your way shortly on the YouTube channel. We'll condense the video and tell the story of what happened, so look forward to that. I am on Twitter, @HiFromGrace. What about you, Ariel?
Love that. I am also on Twitter @ThatOtherAriel. I am getting ready for a spooky season project that I'm involved in with LaTanya Starks. Look out for a announcement pod of that this week coming out. I'll just say that it's, I don't think the pod itself will be too spooky. You know, we're not trying to scare anybody with the pod, but we will be talking about some spooky things for the month of October. And I am also, speaking of October, we are barreling towards a very spooky White Lotus season 2 premiere. Ooh. On October 30th. And Dr. Mann and I are still making our way through season 1. We are now into the second half. And so, yeah, we are up to episode 4, I believe, in that. So, you know, check that out weekly, the White Lotus podcast.
So fun. People should subscribe to our feed. You can either subscribe to the full post-show recaps feed, or you can subscribe specifically just to the post-show recaps theater feed, which is postshowrecaps.com/movies. And rate and review if you do that as well. We'd very much appreciate it. Yeah.
Yes, it doesn't take long, and we appreciate it if you can subscribe. If your phone can hold any more podcasts, you should find space for us. But until next time, we will see you back in the movies. I am Ariel Pass Grace, your Portrait Request Theater. Ta-ta for now.